everybody. Welcome back to But Why, the podcast. The podcast where we talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, just want to tell you to head on over to all of our social media. Get involved in the conversations. You can find us on Twitter at But Why Though PC. And you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/ButWhyThoughPC. And as always, check out our website, ButWhyThoughPodcast.com. And check out all the amazing work that our writers are doing, pumping out stories, their feelings, and just getting the pop culture job done. If you want to support us even more, head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/ButWhyThoughPC. Enjoy the show.
Water. Earth. Fire. Air. Long ago, the four nations lived together in harmony. Then, everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked. Only the Avatar, master of all four elements, could stop them. But when the world needed him most, he vanished. 100 years passed, and my brother and I discovered the new Avatar, an airbender named Aang. And although his airbending skills are great, he has a lot to learn before he's ready to save anyone. But I believe Aang can save the world.
Hey everyone, welcome back. And today we're talking about Nickelodeon's Avatar, The Last Airbender, and a little bit of The Legend of Korra and what that series has done for animation and us. As always, I'm your host, Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And we have a special guest today, another pretty much member of our family here, But Why Though, Suara Saleh from the Beltway Banthas podcast.
Hey guys, I am so excited to be here to talk about my favorite television series of all time.
We are so excited to have you.
I'm actually really excited to talk about this because Avatar, The Last Airbender, and Legend of Korra mean a lot to me in so many different ways. I'm actually doing my Korra rewatch right now. Like, I'm in season 3 already, and I've watched this series like Avatar The Last Airbender maybe 10 times through, in Legend of Korra like 4 or 5 times through, and this series is brilliant. I love it. Everyone should watch it. It's the best series of all time, in my opinion. Just my opinion, but still, it's like, I love it. It's so good.
All right, that's a wrap, guys. See you next week.
Wrap it up. We're done.
As always, we will have a lead person. Our avatar for today is going to be Adrian. He'll be taking us through this episode.
Yeah, we're doing this. so we're going to go through a brief overview of kind of like the world in general, talk a little bit about the premise of the two shows, and then kind of get into some about why those. As usual, when I run my episodes, you know, this show has been out for almost 15 years. I'll keep it relatively spoiler-like because I think it's, having just rewatched it and rewatching Legend of Korra now, like it ages really, really well, and I don't want to take any of the huge, huge moments away from anyone listening who listens and is like, hey, I want to go watch this show because it's really good. So our intro question today, Swara kind of already answered part of it because that's how excited he is. So our first question is going to be, how familiar are you with these two series? And if you were a bender, what kind would you be? And we'll start with Matt.
So I know these shows exist, and that's about it. I've never actually watched any episode or seen anything of this. Literally, the answer would be, if you were a bender, what kind of bender would you be? And I'd be the bender that says, bite my shiny metal ass.
From so you'd be a metal bender. You'd be an earth bender.
Yes, that's about it. That's about the only bender I know. So I'm about to learn a lot today.
You get along really well with Toph. I just want to say that.
Good. I'm glad you're here, Matt. Ask lots of questions, and we will try to answer them to the best of our abilities with our knowledge of the show. What about you, Kate?
Yeah. So I have watched Avatar The Last Airbender a crap ton. I probably watched it through at least 4 or 5 times. I watched it when it was in its initial run on Nickelodeon as well. And I got to work at Hot Topic when we had opened the merchandise. So that was really fun. When it comes to bending, I'm going to have to say Earth, mainly because I love Toph. And I just really like the martial arts style that goes behind earthbending, mostly because like I'm not graceful, so all the stomping is something that I would be very good at.
I'm also fascinated, I guess, to do this. I did not know this was a Nickelodeon show.
Yeah. It's really amazing, right?
American made.
Yep. So technically it's not anime, it's Western, it's Japanese style animation in the West. It's like this really weird category. But this
drawn
is
by South Koreans.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Studio Mir specifically. It's very inspired by a lot of East Asian anime, like Japanese and Korean anime. And yeah, you see that consistently throughout the series, including in how the characters are drawn simply. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What about you, Yusor? I know you've given a little bit about how much you love the two series, but if you were a bender, what would you be?
I would absolutely be a waterbender. I love swimming. I love the ocean. I love the element of water generally. And, you know, I'm not sure. I've taken martial arts before, but never like Tai Chi, the martial art that waterbending is based off of. But still, like, I would still just want to manipulate water any way I can. And I love Katara. She's my favorite character in Avatar The Last Airbender. And I think it would also, like, fits, like, my general like fighting philosophy really well, because what waterbending is about taking your opponent's energy and redirecting it back against them. So I really like that sort of balance overall. And yeah, Southern Water Tribe for life.
I thought going into this episode, I thought 10 for 10, you were going to say air. And the fact you said water super surprises me.
Well, that's the thing. Like, my personality is much more aligned with airbender. I'm a vegetarian, so that aligns really well. But still, like, water is where it's at for me. I'd be like a water nomad instead of an air nomad.
I like that. And for me, like Kate, I watched Avatar The Last Airbender when it was on Nickelodeon, kind of like weekly. And then Legend of Korra, I watched up until about the second season. And then when they put it like on the streaming service and kind of like where the show was at the time, I stopped watching it. But a couple of years ago, I kind of binged it all and liked it ever since. I've watched the Avatar The Last Airbender itself a few times as well. I just finished my last rewatch yesterday. So I'm fresh on Avatar The Last Airbender specifically. Show is great. Really, really love it. If I was a bender, probably be earth. I would like to be a firebender, but I just think my personality is probably just more earth. And
I think I might be, and now that I'm thinking about it, I might be you, but inverse. Like, I think my personality is like hyper aggressive, like fire, but I really want to be earth.
It's because you have all the spicy takes.
Oh my god. Yeah, if it's exactly. Said on this episode, I can now make it a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Spicy t-shirt.
I thought for sure the spicy Latina in our podcast was going to say fire, like 10 out of 10, too. So I'm just getting all the guesses wrong today. Great. So that's where we have a nice little, you know, spectrum of love and unknowing of the show. So I'm hoping that at the end of this, we get to share all of our love, and then Matt is excited enough to go watch it, because I think Matt would actually really, really like it. So for our brief overview, so if you're going into this and you're like, well, what is Benders or who is Katara and all this stuff, we're going to take about, you know, 10 minutes to kind of go through the series itself, the world that it's in, and kind of talk about that. So the series itself is set in a fictional universe in which some people can manipulate or bend different elements such as water, earth, fire, or air by variants of Chinese martial arts styles. This kind of like when I first watched the show, I think one of the biggest reasons why I liked it so much is because it reminded me a lot of Captain Planet and kind of like that basis of like each person's controlling a different thing. And I was like, oh, this is really up my alley. And rewatching it again, you kind of get a lot of those vibes too, of kind of like the harmony of like all the elements in it. And that's kind of what the show is based off of, because there's only one person, the Avatar, who can bend all four of the elements, and he's responsible for maintaining balance in the world through the control of all those elements and his connection to the spirit world.
Do you know the individual, like which martial arts are what?
Yeah, we do. It's at the. Do you want to you know off the top of your head, Swer? Because I was just going to scroll down. And
yeah.
I was like, if it's at the bottom, we can skip it and come to it. Then I just know that's something that's always made me really happy. Because like they used to do like the side-by-side Nickelodeon videos.
Those are so cool. I love those so much. So first off, water is based off of Tai Chi, which is a very slow martial art that isn't really used in actual combat, but sort of is like yoga that's used for meditation, exercise, and just good for your health overall. Earth is based off of Hung Gar, which really focuses on strong rooted stances and strong defenses and measured attacks like at your opponent. Northern Shaolin is fire, which actually one of the creators of the show, Brian Kanitsko, practices himself. It's based off of like really high kicks and jumps and leaps and the sort of style that you see in the show from the firebenders to produce these big breaths of flame. And air is based off of Bagua, which is a sort of circle walking martial art where it's just very... like dynamic and you're never staying still, and it really gives the feeling of like constant action, the air basically. So it's really cool how the creators were able to take these real martial arts and apply them to the four main elements in the real world, in the natural world.
Yep. To answer your question, Kate, is that
yes, it does. Answers it really, really well. And I totally feel justified in saying there's a lot of stomping in Hungar, and that I would finish that because I have high kicks. That much is for sure.
Yeah, that'll work. So the world itself is Asiatic-like. So it takes a lot of influences from imagery in East and South Asian countries, Inuit and New World societies. Which is really great. Cause I think like when you watch a lot of, I mean, obviously like this isn't considered, you know, anime, but when you're watching anime, I don't think you really get kind of like the visuals of that kind of culture in those for some reason. I don't know if it's like an Americanizing kind of thing, but going back and watching Avatar: The Last Airbender, the scenery and everything just looks so distinctly different from, area, like the airbenders temples are way different than, you know, the Fire Nation islands and things like that. And a lot of that is to do with them really just taking the imagery from different societies in Asia and bringing those all in kind of like one, encapsulating it all in one show, which I think is phenomenally done in the show.
Chime in and say like it's so culturally eclectic, and how, you know, the air nomads are based off of Buddhist monks, and the northern and southern water tribes are based off the Inuits, and the Fire Nation's based off of Japan and China, especially imperialist Japan, and the Earth Kingdom is based off of China and Korea and a lot of its visuals. And what I love so much about this series is that the creators have taken so much care to take these specific aspects of all these various cultures, and never once does it feel stereotypical. It feels like something that's really organic and lived in, and I love it so much. Sorry, I just want to say that.
I'm going to ask about the balance in the world. What exactly does that mean?
So you're talking about like the Avatar's like purpose, like in the world?
Maintaining balance in the world. Does that mean we have to have peace in all the world? Does that just mean there has to be a set of balance of equilibrium?
Just kind of like an equilibrium balance, just because you can't, you know, take all the bad away from everything. But Avatar The Last Airbender specifically, like getting out all of, you know, it's been bad for so long and he kind of has to put it back into balance. So the Avatar himself, to give you a little background on like what an Avatar is again, like he or she is the master of all four elements, the only person who could use all four elements, and is basically just reincarnation every time they die. So when one dies, there's a cycle of the Avatars, and it goes in the same cycle basically throughout the whole thing. So it starts in the Fire Nation, then it's an air nomad, then it goes to the water tribe, and then to the earth kingdom, and so on and so forth, basically throughout all time, unless something breaks the line of avatars. So the avatar cycle can only be broken if the avatar is killed in the avatar state. And basically what the Avatar state is, it's a defense mechanism that puts the Avatar in like supreme control and basically like heightens up all their abilities. It's basically like Super Saiyan Avatar is probably the easiest way to explain it. They gain all the knowledge and abilities of all the past Avatars until the Avatar state has passed. Like I said, even though they're the most powerful in the Avatar state, if they're killed, the reincarnation cycle stops and the Avatar won't be reborn again. So even when they're at the most powerful, they're also at the most vulnerable in that state. And the Avatar can learn to control that, but it takes like a lot of time and things like that to be able to do it. And just only really ever happens in like extreme peril and things of that nature. So it's different from like Super Saiyan where they just do it all the time because to beat people, they tried to avoid using it as much as they can. Hmm. So for the two series themselves, they're just, I think they're pretty different in terms of like tonally different. And a lot of it has to come just from like the time periods they're in. And I guess what kind of what the showrunners are trying to get across in the different shows. So Avatar: The Last Airbender, which is the first show, follows Aang. Just kidding. We're not pronouncing Aang through this.
Pronunciation. Oh my God.
12-year-old Airbender.
Counter for how many times that gets dropped.
Yeah. 12-year-old Airbender Aang and his friends, who are primarily a brother and sister from the Southern Water Tribe, Katara and Sokka, who found Aang trapped in ice for 100 years. They all, basically the three of them are going throughout the world and trying to bring peace and unity because the Fire Nation has been waging a 100-year war against the other three nations. And the three seasons that it runs is basically helping Aang, who is the last of his people, master the four elements so he can take on the Fire Lord and end the Fire Nation's kind of like tyrannical rule of the world. The seasons themselves ran from 2005 to 2008 on Nickelodeon, and it was basically an instant hit. Like, it was immediately one of Nickelodeon's most highest rated shows. I know the ranking is a little dated, obviously, but it's 35 on IGN's top 100 animated series. It's won multiple Annie Awards and a Peabody Award. It's been syndicated in over 105 countries, and the series finale, Sozin's Comet, which is like a big three-parter episode, averaged 5.6 million views on its premiere, which is pretty good for a show on Nickelodeon. That's basically just a cartoon. That's not like, and it's marketed to kids. It's not genuinely marketed to adults and things like that. So it did really, really well. Any questions on that, Matt?
So basically, since we have these elemental, I guess, the eight different elemental, do they counteract each other? Like water would then beat fire, per se, where you have wind would beat earth, or then or earth would beat water.
Yeah.
And the air beats fire, fire beats air, I believe.
Yeah, it doesn't work like Pokemon in that sort of way. It's actually really something that the series from Avatar to Legend of Korra consistently reiterates is that it's the skill of the individual bender who's that determines the outcome of a fight, you know, who's going to win. And at certain times, firebenders may be stronger. For example, firebenders are stronger during the day when they have the sun to give them more energy, like literally a great ball of fire in the sky, giving them heat, like heating them up to power them up. Whereas, waterbenders are stronger at night with the moon, and especially during the full moon, like when there's a high tide specifically, because waterbending is based off of a sort of push and pull of the water. That's like the most basic sort of waterbending. And the original waterbender in their mythology is the moon itself for exercising its gravitational waves on the water and, you know, going up and down, pushing and pulling the water. And yeah, for airbend, and it also really depends on your environment. Like, for example, a waterbender will typically be stronger in a river or like next to the ocean or something. An airbender will be stronger in a wide open space, where an earthbender will be stronger, you know, with a lot of earth around, which is mostly everywhere. So
earthbenders might have a lot of earth around.
You know what I mean? Like, or firebenders, again, like if they're around a lot of heat. So it really depends. And I think the series does a really great job of balancing that out consistently throughout.
And I think to like Matt's, like to kind of like build off of what Suara said, there are instances where they realize that certain bending techniques aren't working against a certain bender because they are feeding that bender. It happens with Aang and Zuko a lot. So they kind of have to adjust to each other and learn what works and what doesn't. But like Zuko's not an automatic win, and he's a firebender over Aang, who's an airbender. So it doesn't work like that, but it does like kind of factor in a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Yep. I think those are perfect answers. Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. That's basically how it is. basically, if you're better, you could find ways to fight and win, basically.
Yeah. Like if you're an awesome waterbender, a small pouch of water around you in the desert, you'll still kick ass with that tiny pouch of water.
Yeah, basically.
Katara, yeah.
So then we move on to The Legend of Korra, which is the sequel series to Avatar The Last Airbender. And this series follows Avatar Korra, who is the direct reincarnation of Aang from the previous series. And she faces political and spiritual unrest in a modernizing world. Basically, at this point, it's kind of like Industrial Revolution. It's a lot of kind of like steampunk. In the Avatar The Last Airbender, like metal and things like that aren't super known. The Fire Nation is barely starting to like make steam engines and things like that. But now 70 years later in Legend of Korra, it's a much more common thing to see things like that. So she's in a completely different world than Aang is in the previous series. And this one, as the name would suggest, it's much more focused on kind of like her journey throughout the series. And from kind of brash and broody to kind of a complete and total spiritual avatar throughout the from start to finish. And in this one, it's directly related to the original series. So you get lots of callbacks from characters. You know, you have sons and daughters of former characters from Avatar The Last Airbender. We get to see Aang because as we mentioned earlier, all the avatars are connected. So Korra talks to Aang. Could we get older Aang and things like that throughout the series? So those are always really nice to see throughout the four seasons that it runs from 2012 to 2014. Just a note that The Legend of Korra has more seasons, but Avatar The Last Airbender has more episodes because the three seasons of Avatar The Last Airbender run like 20 plus episodes, whereas Legend of Korra is more of a mini series and only has about 13 to 14 on average per season.
Also, fun fact, Legend of Korra was originally just going to be one season. And like Michael DiMartino and Brian Knitzko were actually surprised by the amazing response it got, and like they made a deal with Nickelodeon to get more seasons, which was really awesome.
Yeah, and give us our Netflix series because we deserve it. Yeah. So The Legend of Korra didn't quite have the viewership as Avatar The Last Airbender did. The first season really did, but it kind of dropped off really, really hard in the second through fourth seasons. So much so that Nick decided to shift the seasons to like an online outlet instead of putting it on cable, where it had, you know, a little bit better results. Despite like the lack of viewership, it still won multiple Annie Awards. It won multiple awards for IGN, and also won awards with the NAACP for its characters and story development for the things that it does in the show.
Because Korra is a character of color. She comes from the Southern Water Tribe, brown skin and stuff. Sorry, I just want to make a point about what Nickelodeon did when they put it online. That pissed me off so much. I was like, you know, at first it was in the middle of season three. So what happened before this, we got season two and I think the ratings were still like pretty strong overall. Adrian, you're right. They weren't as high as season one. That's for most series generally. And what Nickelodeon did, first off, they announced that season three of Korra was coming out like maybe 2 months or so after season two came out. I thought, oh, this is awesome. Like, you know, we're getting season three so much sooner than we usually would. But then I realized, oh, wait, they've done like little to no marketing for this. And then in the middle of season three, they make a announcement out of nowhere that, hey, we're moving Korra online. It's not canceled, but you'll still be able to see it online. And like, again, like they were sort of just trying to shelve it to somewhere because they actually knew and figured out that a lot of people were illegally downloading the show. They found like a lot of Korra watchers are actually adults and not so much kids on like the main Nickelodeon channel. So mainly the adults were like finding it online and watching it. So what Nick decided to do was like, okay, we're just going to put it online instead so you can watch it, but we won't have to worry about the ratings anymore or give proper promotion for it. So thankfully, Korra has still lived on in a lot of ways, but the way that Nickelodeon handled it was honestly just a travesty. If you want to have those strong ratings for Korra, then you should have marketed it just as much as you did seasons one and two. That's like my interpretation generally. And it just like overall just makes me really mad how Nickelodeon handled it. And I'm grateful that they produced Avatar The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra, but I can't forgive them for like how they treated it in the end.
It's okay. We're here now. And now you get to talk about it and you have an avenue to voice your anger.
Thanks, guys.
It's also one of those that I thought was interesting because, one, I know a lot of people love this show, obviously, from listening to you two. I did not actually realize that this is only, one, that it started in 2005. It was that recent. And the fact that it's only two shows that are basically 7 years apart and they only run for basically three seasons each four seasons that are very short.
The staying power of this series is incredible. And the amount, degree to which people love it. Like, guys, I love this basically as much as I love Star Wars. You know, like, I just, and in some ways, I think it does a lot of things better than Star Wars. You know, like, it's an amazing series. Yeah.
I think one of the good things about it is it took a lot of the East Asian animation styles. But what it left out a lot is you don't find a lot of filler and you have a lot of concise story building, story and character building throughout everything. Like, I would personally say that one of the reasons why I've watched Avatar so many times is when you watch through it a bunch of time, you realize that characters show up again and again and again, and like not only that, but almost every character that pops up has a story attached to them. They're not just there, like the smallest characters will end up influencing things, or you know, at least you understand the entire universe and you feel immersed in it, and they do it concisely and in, you know, in a small number of episodes.
Yep, completely agree. And with that, I'll rush to these last forms of media that Legend of Korra and The Last Airbender cover, and then we'll get into some of the why those, because one of the first ones is definitely is the storytelling aspects of the series. So outside of their outside of the TV series, Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra both have graphic novels. Jesus.
Not easy, is it, Adrian?
I just want to talk about why those. So Avatar The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra both have graphic novels through Dark Horse that basically continue after the respective series. So you get a little bit of background on some of the unanswered questions. Kind of Avatar The Last Airbender specifically kind of bridges that gap between those 70 years that we don't get to really see and answer some of those questions that we kind of get cliffhangered on in the final episode of this the season of season three. The Legend of Korra.
What happened to Zuko's mom? What happened to Zuko's mom? Sorry.
Yeah. Go read it. It's very sad. And I don't want to talk about it because it's very sad. And Zuko's mom is the best. She's 10 out of 10 the best mom.
This show is also super emotional. I have definitely so many feels watching this show.
So many feelings, and every character is so relatable, and you just care about them all so much.
Okay, we're gonna get there. And after season one of Legend of Korra, it was put into two books. That's what kind of all we got from that. Both of them have video games, And then there was a movie done by M. Night Shyamalan about Avatar: The Last Airbender, which I personally think
was the greatest movie ever made.
And will die on this hill that it is the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
Wait, Adrian, what is this? I've never heard of such an atrocity. I don't know what this is.
And it's the worst adaptation of any media I've ever seen. I don't know if Dragon Ball Evolution is worse because I didn't watch Ball Evolution.
It's worse. It's worse. This is like second. This is second to last or second to worst. Dragon Ball Evolution is worst.
Okay.
Sorry. Can I just say, has there ever been a good American anime adaptation?
Like into a movie?
Yeah.
Live action.
Live action, yeah. That's what I mean. Live action adaptation.
Death Note is a hot piece of garbage too, so.
Yeah, no, I can't think of one. Yeah. And this show was made by Americans and it was still bad. It's terrible. Yeah, we'll talk about why it's terrible at the very end. It basically covers the first season of Avatar: The Last Airbender, which is probably like a really good season, and like the third act should have been so good, but it was terrible. Okay, I'm done with that because I don't want to talk about it because I'm going to start getting angry because M. Night Shyamalan does not care about us Avatar fans.
Well, and that's the thing. When I was telling people to go watch this movie, I was like, his kids love this movie. You know he's going to do it service because his kids love it. And it just, I was, nope.
Do his kids hate him now?
Probably.
I don't know, but I would.
Or he's like just going for like an ultra long con and just trying to troll the shit out of his own kids. Which like that case is also a terrible thing to do. Physical pain for those of you who can't see his face.
I'm in physical pain. I hate you, M. Night Shyamalan, so much.
Yes, he does have a movie worse than The Happening.
You mean The Village, right?
I don't know. They're all so bad.
They're not so all bad.
Just really have a bad taste.
No, as a horror fan, he does a lot to.
I'm just saying those three movies.
Come on, guys, let's talk about Avatar. Come on.
M. Night Shyamalan matters.
Not really.
He does actually, because it's all like this. I will take a break for that one.
This is a different episode, Kate.
Bringing my cardboard cutout for that one.
Same. But why those four Avatar? So we're going to start off with, and anyone who's listened to any episode that I've ever ran on this episode or on this podcast, I love storytelling. And the thing I love most about storytelling is world building. And Avatar: The Last Airbender from the get-go builds off such an easy premise that their intro basically gives you everything you need to know about the series. Matt, have you ever listened to the intro? Like, do you know what the intro says?
No.
Let's do the intro. Adrian, let's do the intro right now.
Water. Sorry, I'll let you do it because I know you'll be so much more excited about it than I will. Go fine. For it.
Water. Earth. Fire, air. Long ago, the four nations lived together in harmony. Then, everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked. Only the Avatar, master of all four elements, could stop them. But when the world needed him most, he vanished. 100 years passed, and my brother and I discovered the new Avatar, an airbender named Aang. And although his airbending skills are great, he has a lot to learn before he's ready to save anyone. But I believe Aang can save the world.
The music is so good, too. And then it
it's
goes
so
on.
Good. It's so good. It's
music. Thank you.
Basically the intro, and Sword just nailed it. That was it.
I've literally rehearsed it 1,000 times. I kid you not. I love this show so much.
So it gives you the world straight away. There's four nations. The Fire Nation's doing bad stuff. And Aang has to stop them with the help of Katara and Sokka. Like, what else do you need? And the greatest thing about it is that from that simple premise, every single episode builds off of that premise. So you get to see this world through the eyes of Aang, who has been in basically a ball of ice for 100 years and has no idea what the world is like now. And the siblings, Katara and Sokka, because they have never left the North Pole or left the South Pole. So as we're seeing these new areas, we're seeing it as like, we don't know what this is either. So their interactions of their like naivety of all this stuff really helps like me as the watcher be like, oh, okay, this is why this is like this. This is why this is like this. Oh, okay. This happened in like the history from like the 100 years. So it builds it super well. And it's never too kind of like, this is too much information overload. It's very, very simple and straightforward in what it's trying to get across in that. That sound fair?
Yeah, and what it does so well is that it distills all of these complex socio-political topics and things and trends that we observe in world history, such as colonialism, such as prejudice, such as sexism, such as traditionalism versus modernism. It takes all of this and distills it in such a way that little kids can understand what's going on, or that like adults will still really enjoy. And particularly with the media that I love media that can cut across like sort of age boundaries, and that little kids can enjoy it, that teenagers can enjoy it, that adults can enjoy it. And Avatar, I think, is a perfect example of that.
So what exactly is like the anti-bender movement?
Can you wait till he gets to it?
Well, he's just kind of working his way in there, I thought.
I think Spar was just talking. I don't think Spar.
Oh, I literally thought Spar just took a cue and went to the whole next issue.
It's related. It's through Avatar The Last Airbender to Legend of Korra. And, you know, like with the Fire Nation, you have a prime example of an imperialist power that's like really oppressing the rest of the world.
I know this, but this is just it's coming from his brain.
Oh, okay.
His brain is leading the episode.
Spar can speak and leave. Spar said, I'm taking the next.
This is how it works.
I got this.
I've done enough episodes with Spar to know that I just need to put a few words on there and he will just flow through all of my points.
See? Very smoothly. Very eloquently, too.
Yeah.
I thought it was perfectly well transitioned. That was great.
Well, I know somebody doesn't know this and then it's the anti-vendor movement. Oh, well, but you don't know anything.
But let's talk about the anti-vendor movement, because that is something very interesting. In season one of Legend of Korra, which takes place 70 years after the end of the 100-year war, you have a certain subset of people in the main setting of Legend of Korra, Republic City, non-benders who feel as though a lot of the world's problems have been a result of bending, a result of powerful people duking heads to try to gain more land or more resources or more power, and the common man will often be left in the middle and suffering. And you know, some of these non-benders feel as though, hey, has the Avatar really done anything good for us? Maybe we need to take more of the power back for ourselves. And it's really compelling. And it's really based off of communism and how that arose in like the late 1800s, early 1900s. And it's, again, done in a really succinct and pointed way that anyone can understand.
Like that Spar just dropped communism on a Nickelodeon show.
Oh, this show was so good. This show was not so wrong.
Yeah, like
he's not wrong at
all. I didn't say he was wrong. I just said I thought it was.
The themes are certainly there. And he's right. Like they do really present. Because, I mean, regardless of like if adults are watching it, like it's still on Nickelodeon. Like it's still marketed to be a kid's cartoon show to watch, you know, Friday nights on Nickelodeon. But they do tackle like these really, really big issues. And another big one outside of like social political issues is they really do tackle kind of technology versus nature, or just in general, taking care of nature versus kind of using up natural resources. And that's very pointed, especially like in today's times where we can't get global warming mentioned at the State of the Union address these days. So you really get that. First, with the Fire Nation, is kind of just like burning through resources and burning through lands. And you kind of see the upset that does with like the spiritual realm, because the world that we're talking about is like runs parallel with a spiritual world. And once one's out of balance, the spirit world kind of like lashes back against that. And that's kind of where like the big pointed thing for the Fire Nation in Avatar The Last Airbender is that. And basically all of Legend of Korra is them dealing with this kind of like industrial movement and kind of being out of balance, just getting away from nature almost entirely, and kind of like the spirits like lashing back, specifically in the second season for sure. So you get multiple themes, not just outside of like colonialism and things like that. You also get some real world things of like recycle your stuff, or a giant panda is going to come, spirit panda is going to come take your kids away from you, basically.
Which I will say, the colonialism, like the colonialism, anti-colonialism, colonialism, and post-colonialism that they show in this show is like on point as somebody who studied that crap. Like it is on point. Like I can, if I was teaching a class in college about these things, I would pick different episodes of Last Airbender and show it to them. So
it's done so well again. And Adrian, talking about technology versus, you know, traditionalism, again, that's a through line throughout the entire series. And I think more pointedly so in Legend of Korra, because Aang's journey is really about defeating the Fire Nation and defeating the Fire Lord. It's a basic good versus evil plot. But Korra and the villains that she faces are all about that struggle between the advancing technological world, the increasing egalitarian world, as we mentioned with the Equalists, and the non-benders, I was talking about the anti-bending revolution, and still maintaining tradition and that sort of spiritual balance with the world.
Yeah, I like it. I think you're completely right. And then, because I knew that topic was going to get a little heavy and very, we have Kate, who's a scholar, so I knew it was going to get very scholarly very quickly. So I also wanted to throw in some other fun stuff that the world builds, is that they have really, really cool animals in this world that I wish existed in ours.
I'm more excited about these cute animals than I am about colonialism. I'm just going to say that right there.
As you should be.
Yeah, so there's like a whole bunch of kind of different animals, and I'll list some of them, and I can let I'll just let your imagination picture what they are, Matt. So they have things called platypus bears, which are giant bears that kind of look like platypus. An armadillo.
So do they lay eggs?
They do lay eggs.
Cool.
That's another thing, Matt. The science in the show is pretty on point. Like, regardless, yeah, like if it being a kid's show, like they do make the platypus bear lay eggs. Like one of them gets scared and it lays an egg. It runs away.
And you actually learn a lot about these animals too, because it goes back to the whole nature and technology thing. Like as Aang, Katara, and Sokka go through this, they actually meet these animals and learn about them and sometimes save them.
Yeah. Can I just say, I really think that Matt's favorite character would be Sokka.
Why?
Because they're both like smart scientist guys who love to rationally explain the world.
I feel like Sokka would annoy him because Sokka's like kind of stupid.
What? No, Sokka just doesn't have a lot of common sense, but he's really smart.
Yeah, yeah, and I feel like really that would annoy Matt.
Okay.
Because I don't have a lot of common sense, and I annoy Matt.
Okay. Fair enough.
But the science part, and like he has to be the most logical out of everybody because he does not have bending to fall back on.
That's true, but Sokka is also very interested in math and science and explaining the technological world. And the way they explain scientific facts, like in season or all of Avatar: The Last Airbender, from Sokka and his talking about engineering and stuff is honestly really cool. And I learned stuff from it when I first watched it. Yeah. It was great.
Very true.
Yeah.
I thought platypus
bears like eggs. There's armadillo lions. There are koala sheep. There's koala sheep. I think there's koala pigs too, if I remember correctly.
Pigs.
Yeah. Saber-tooth mouse lions, which look really dope.
Moose lions.
Yeah. Foo-foo cuddly poops.
Yeah.
Wait, what? My
foo-foo cuddly poops. That one baby moose lion.
Yeah. My personal favorite, turtle ducks, are super cute. Giant badger moles, which consequently taught earthbending to humans. So even though they're just animals, some of them do possess the ability to do a lot of this cool bending stuff.
Yeah. Also why I want to be an earthbender, so I can get taught by a giant badger mole how to earthbend.
You want to be taught so badly. The first earthbenders were badger moles, the first firebenders were dragons, the first airbenders were air bisons, and for waterbenders, the first waterbenders were the moon and the ocean, which take the form of two koi fish in the northern water tribe. So that's, sorry, that's a little bit of a spoiler, but that's interesting.
The more you know. And so, consequently, they're the only ones who can get their bending taken away by, like, killing spirits, basically.
Yeah. Which is really sad.
So some of these are not hard to imagine, except possibly the flying bison.
It's so he's my cute.
He's my second favorite. Appa. He's a flying bison, and he's like a huge bison, but he has like a beaver tail. But he has like a head of a bison. Yeah, he's like six legs. He's huge. He's Aang's spirit animal guide named Appa.
He's adorable.
And he's also based off of
how does he fly?
He airbends.
He's an airbender.
Oh, yeah.
He uses his tail to like swish the air to propel him upward. His tail, which is based off of a manatee. He's also based off of manatee as well as a bison.
I like it.
In this picture, he's like half pug with a tongue sticking out.
That's just fan art.
I don't care. It's headcanon.
Yeah, Appa's great. And then you also have polar bear dogs, which is just basically a giant dog who's like a polar bear face. And I mentioned that because Naga is Korra's spiritual animal guide, and she's huge. And Stefani wants to rename Blossom to Naga now.
So
that's where we're at right now. She's like, I'm gonna cosplay as Korra, and then we'll just bring Blossom to the convention, and she will be my Naga.
I love it.
Basically, like the animals in this world are so diverse and crazy that there are like normal animals that we have in our everyday life, but they're kind of surprised with them. So there's this one scene where they're invited to go have dinner with the king at the palace. And they say that he's having a banquet for his bear. And they're like, you mean a platypus bear? And he's like, no, just a bear. Like, you mean a skunk bear? Like, no, just a bear. Like, no, an armadillo bear? Gopher bear? Like, no, it's just a bear. And like, just by them saying that, they're like, oh, this place is weird. Like, they just have regular bears. Like, what is this?
That's how you know Ba Sing Se is evil.
Yep.
Yeah. But the bear is cute, though. He has like a little hat and everything. He's a cute bear.
He's a cute bear. But
what's Momo? What type of animal
Momo's is Momo? Momo's a flying lemur.
Yeah, he's just a flying lemur.
Momo's
a cute lemur who flies. He's cute. I like Momo.
Yeah. Based off a lemur and a bat.
Communism, colonialism, and cute animals. It's the three C's of any good show.
Yeah, basically. And that's why the show is so great in its world building. And then from that, you get really, really great characters. We've talked a lot about them kind of organically throughout, but just kind of hit on the points. So you have great characters, and like Kate mentioned earlier, really great character development, even with characters who aren't the Avatar. So despite the name of the shows, some of my favorite characters are not the two avatars that we talk about. This is particularly, I think it does, it's where I can talk about it a little bit more in Legend of Korra, just because I know that he's more fresh on watching it. But rewatching Avatar The Last Airbender, they do such a good job of showing side character journeys throughout. I think a good reason why they're able to do that is that Avatar The Last Airbender itself has more episodes. So I think they're able to kind of go through and have those kind of like filler episodes. I do, you know, bunny ear quotes here for filler episodes, because like Kate said, you see all those characters again in the last season. You're seeing characters you haven't seen since season one kind of come back and kind of join the fight against the Fire Nation.
And you kind of into the story.
And you care about them because of what you saw them do in the past. I mean, you even have one of my favorite episodes with Appa, who you know, gets taken away from the main group, and basically it's the whole episode is kind of like what happened to Appa while he was separated from the group. There's Naga yelling.
I'll just like take this moment to say, like, I actually think my favorite episodes of Avatar are not episodes that focus on Aang. Like, hands down. Like, I think my favorite, obviously the Toph-centered ones, but my favorite by far is the dynamic relationship between Uncle Iroh and Zuko. Mm-hmm. And Uncle Iroh is probably like my second favorite character with just how well he's done. And Uncle Iroh is literally just this like spoiled kid's uncle who's teaching him through life. And like, you get to see them go through like the pitfalls and the triumphs and then the pitfalls again. And it's like, it's amazing.
So I do got a quick,
yeah.
So obviously we don't really know per se, but could this be one of the reasons that the movie was so bad? Was because they tried to jumble all this into a movie instead of letting it play out over, like you said, almost 30 plus episodes?
I don't know. I think for the first movie, I don't think so, because like all of the big stuff that comes into play happens like in the last season. They could have easily done that first season in just a movie. I think they could have done that one fine, because the first season is just more of them kind of like gelling together and things like that. You don't get a lot of the side characters until the later parts of the first season into the second season. So there's a lot of reasons why that movie sucks, but I don't think that was the premise.
Shows a lot of like side characters that if you try to portray that in a movie with limited time and limited everything else, it can.
But I will say this, like to that point, I think one of the reasons I really hated it is because the characterizations in that movie are so bad.
That's it right there. Like the characters aren't done like how the characters are in the show. Not necessarily like because there was too much for them to show. They just didn't do the characters correctly.
And they're little things. They're like tiny little things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's another look. Yeah, and there's another one of my points is that all the characters are pretty multidimensional. They're not all like one note characters throughout, even like in deep down to the side characters. And I think a perfect example of that is Sokka. Like we talked about a little bit earlier about he is kind of like the comic relief, goofy person of like Team Avatar, but he also turns out to be a brilliant military strategist by the end of the show. And he does all of this without bending. And it's a big character jump from like the first episode of Avatar: The Last Airbender, where he's basically telling Katara, his sister, that she can't do anything because she's a girl, basically. Like she can't fish because she's a girl, because all he's like the only man in the tribe because everybody else went off to go fight in the 100-year war. But by the end, he has he's a military strategist and a girlfriend who can kick his ass, basically.
Yeah, he grows a lot. Yeah, like I really love how in season one, when he meets his girlfriend Suki, like in episode 4 of season 1, it literally just like cuts down his sexism like really effectively, and you really see him learn a lot through the woman he travels with, his sister Katara, who grows a lot in her own journey, and Toph, obviously, who it just is incredibly badass and just won't take any like shit. And I love Toph. She's amazing. My favorite characters are Katara, Toph, and then Uncle Iroh and Zuko. Like those four characters in Avatar, The Last Airbender, and I love Sokka too, but still those four, or all of them, really. Like,
We're waiting for you to say all of them.
Six.
Another big thing about the characters, and I'm gonna take a little shot at Star Wars here. The characters fail a lot in both of these series, but the failure is done so well and it's believable that I don't think it's a detriment to the story at all. So in Avatar: The Last Airbender, hardly any of their plans to beat the Fire Nation ever work, and they end up running away from like a lot of things because they're getting beat. Because they are, at the end of the day, you know, at the start, they're only three kids trying to take down an entire, you know, colonial army that is the Fire Nation. And Legend of Korra, Korra gets manipulated a lot and makes a lot of mistakes basically throughout the entirety of the thing, but she learns for them quite a bit.
And honestly, in my opinion, I find her way more relatable than Aang. Korra is my favorite character throughout this entire series. And while I love Aang, his like overall plot in After the Last Airbender is about gaining the confidence to be the Avatar, whereas Korra, it's the opposite. She loves being the Avatar. She starts out with a lot of confidence and she makes mistakes. She's overconfident and she has sincere insecurities. And I find that more relatable. I find that to be like, that's all of us. We all want to appear as though we know what we're doing and that we can, do the job very effectively, but we all make mistakes and we learn from them. And I think the real struggle is like learning to learn from that.
Yeah. So we can kind of jump into a little bit of that. So I think another big thing about these shows, obviously they're called Avatar, Avatar, they're about the Avatar. So the hero's journey that both of these avatars go through is a super big part of character development. And for Aang's perspective, he's only 12 years old. He's the last of his people because the Fire Nation wiped out all of the other airbenders because they knew the next avatar was going to be an airbender based on the cycle of the avatar. So they killed them all. He was the last one. He has like the fate of the world on his shoulders and has to grapple with the changed world in 100 years. The change in the world that's gone on in 100 years, he feels responsible for since he wasn't there to prevent it. And dealing with all the situations while still trying to like be true to himself in the way of, you know, the airbender, the way of the monk, which is now, you know, a long dead way of doing things. So he grapples with a lot of that. And then Sora kind of went through Korra's journey through. So they're basically obviously almost like polar opposite characters. So you get different perspectives from both of the shows and the hero's journey in both shows. And another great thing that I really, really love about this, and I'll let Sora talk about the kind of hero, the villain redemption in Legend of Korra, but the villain redemption in Avatar The Last Airbender with Zuko, who is the exiled prince of the Fire Lord, is probably the best redemption arc of any character I've seen in just about everything.
I co-sign that completely.
Yeah, and another shot at Star Wars, like, if you're going to redeem, you know, Kylo Ren in, you know, this next movie, take a look on how well they did Zuko's character here. Because it's not just, something happens, okay, now I'm good, and now everyone accepts me. Like, he struggles to get to that place, and he's not even accepted outright when he does finally come to terms with being a good person, which I think is how it would be. Like, if you're going to try and kill someone forever, they're not going to accept you just because you did one good deed.
And he fails at being good. Like,
and he fails at being good.
Like this natural thing. He has to work at it.
Yeah.
And it kind of works to show that, like, everybody has to work at being good because he wants to be good, but that, like, sometimes being good is the complete opposite of what you want to do. And, like, him making those steps to do that is one of the reasons, like, one, why Katara doesn't trust him because he's been trying to kill them. And then two, like, his struggle of, like, overcoming that and, like, having to be, like, second nature.
And he is always trying to do what he perceives to be good. He thinks that it is his duty to capture the Avatar, that to regain his honor, to serve the Fire Nation, and to be a dutiful son to his abusive father. But he realizes through his journey and seeing the damage that the Fire Nation has inflicted on the world, you know, like that, hey, maybe this isn't the right path, but still he may lapse into some of those bad tendencies. But again, like, once he's in a certain state of mind, he learns from his mistakes and he reflects on it diligently. And then again, Kate, just like you said, he tries to be good, but he fails at it because he doesn't really know how to do it. But he allows, you know, his new friends to help ease him into that, you know, going on a spiritual or enlightening field trip with Zuko, you know, for a couple of episodes. And those episodes are done so, so well. Like, it's really, again, I love the writing in the show so much. And Zuko, like, you relate to him so well, you know, whether he's on the Fire Nation side, whether he's on his own side, whether he's on the Avatar side, consistently throughout, because, you know, we've all dealt with the same doubts and insecurities that Zuko has. You know, in a lot of ways, I see him like Korra, like that, for the reasons I was talking about earlier. And he is such an incredible three-dimensional character that is always sympathetic. And, you know, Adrian, you mentioned Kylo Ren in Star Wars, and he's like, you know, I recently wrote about this on the But Why Though blog, that Kylo Ren is like the most divisive Star Wars character ever. You either love him or you absolutely viscerally hate him. Whereas with someone like Zuko, from the way he's been written from the onset, has been incredibly sympathetic. And like, I applaud Brian Knitzko and Michael DiMartino for giving us this amazing character.
Yeah. I think a lot of the reasons why his character's done so well is because he's paired with good old Uncle Iroh. Exactly. Who is the father lord. I watched the episode where he called him the Father Lord yesterday. Now I can't stop thinking about the Father Lord.
I mean, that's the point, right?
The Fire Lord's older brother, General Iroh, is my favorite character in the entire show. And his arc is just phenomenal too. And you go through his arc without like really going through it. You kind of go through it by kind of like them telling the story about him. He's already gone through kind of like his own like spiritual journey of going from being the general of the Fire Nation and literally being on the doorsteps of taking over the Earth Kingdom in his father's war to basically renouncing Fire Nation and kind of like what they're doing because of the death of his son, and basically becoming like the wise voice of reason throughout the entire series, even into the second series, where he's basically such a good dude that he gets a chill in the spirit world after he's dead because he's such a good person. And he just drops like the best knowledge, I think, in all of the show. And everybody gets to get imparted with his knowledge, from Toph in a random episode to Zuko to Avatar Aang in it. So like, and Korra gets it in Legend of Korra. So he's kind of like the through line through both of the series, and kind of like the voice of reason. He's Yoda of this, but cooler,
I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. He has like the best one-liners too.
Oh yeah, the best one-liners. And he's funny, yeah. He cracks jokes. Yeah. He's like, and he's kind of like that stereotypical like old man in the anime genre, mm-hmm. without all the pervy stuff, basically.
Oh my god. Yeah. Oh my god. No Master Roshi. Yeah. Can I just say I don't really like Master Roshi.
Master Roshi's terrible. He's terrible. He's not.
But
yeah, I also think like one of the biggest things that this show does, and like going back to your points about failure, which I think is really important, is like it, like Uncle Iroh like lets Zuko fail, and like doesn't really tell him. He's like, I told you in the beginning. Now you failed. You know, look, be introspective. Look at it for yourself. It'll kind of like, it's not like overbearing guiding. Zuko thinks it is, but when you're watching it, it's a lot of like teaching Zuko without teaching Zuko, because that's the only way that Zuko can be taught, if that makes sense. Like, you know, some people, you're totally gonna yell at them and they're not gonna pay attention to what you're saying. And then other people, you have to like kind of, you know, come at it from the side, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the show has relatable villains through and through. From being sympathetic with Iroh to being sympathetic with Zuko, to even some of the side characters who are villains in the show, who kind of have, they get like their own episode where you get to hear about their lives and kind of what they're going through and why they're doing what they're doing. And you can't help but feel sympathetic for them too in Avatar The Last Airbender.
You feel, so one of the main villains in Avatar The Last Airbender is Azula, Zuko's sister, who comes off as a psychopath in a lot of ways, who's dead set on just being perfect. She's amazing. That's the thing. She's amazing. She has so much pressure put on her from her father. And in season three, you get to see more of her side of her own story. And she's not just this like crazy villain. She has depth, and she is really cruel and really sadistic throughout a lot of the series. But the series is so brilliantly written to make you empathize and sympathize with these villains that you feel sympathy for Azula, you know, like in the last couple of episodes of season three, and you feel really sorry for her. And yeah, Kate, were you going to say something?
No, I was going to say, I think actually when we're talking about this, I don't think it's really accurate to call them villains, because I think The Last Airbender does it in a way that you understand why the majority of people are doing what they're doing.
Exactly.
Everybody has a side.
Except for Fire Lord Ozai. He's kind of a dick.
Yeah. He's the only villain. The abusive father is the only villain.
Yeah. And she's kind of a jerk because she threw a rock at a turtle duck when she was a kid. So I don't like her.
That's her worst action ever.
It really is her worst action, in my opinion. The whole show is her throwing a rock at the turtle duck. All right. So I think from there we can go on to representation. Kate, how's that sound? Cool.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And we'll just start just straight away with the way women are represented in the show. I don't have any statistics to back this up, but I think there's like more women main characters in this show than there are male main characters.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure.
At the very least, it's equal. And the thing about you know, at both the shows and especially in Legend of Korra, you know, there are definitely like more woman characters, like, you know, all throughout, is that it's completely seamless. It's it passes the Bechdel test, you know, pretty flawlessly. And, you know, you have female characters, you know, like Katara and Toph, like who become really good friends and aren't talking about like a man or anything. They're just like talking about life and they're talking about their real issues and, you know, things that can be, that anyone can relate to. And again, in Legend of Korra, like you have women leaders at the forefront dealing with these large socio-political issues, you know, like the ones we're talking about, communism, anarchy, and even fascism. And these shows get really deep. And it's the women in Legend of Korra who are at the forefront, sort of like leading the conversation, leading the actions that are taking place. And you have amazing performances, and you have, in addition to the characterization, like you have so many different types of women and so many different kinds of journeys happening consistently throughout. And, you know, I will say, especially with Korra, with what she deals with in the later seasons of Legend of Korra, she deals with a lot of trauma and PTSD, and that actually got lauded for how well that was portrayed. And you also have, like, you know, in general, really, just like great representations of different people and different like types of people. Like, you know, we're talking about Sokka, we're talking about Aang, we're talking about Zuko, we're talking about Iroh, we're talking about so many different and rich characters that can be related to through any sort of way. And again, like, I give it my hats off to the showrunners who wrote like these really incredible characters.
So that was really well said, but I do at least want you can see. Can you give like everybody for anybody that may not know what the Bechdel test the is? Bechdel.
Oh yeah, sure. The Bechdel test is literally just two women speaking on screen about something other than a man / romance. That's it. Yeah.
And you'd think that that's like a simple like bar. It's not.
Well, no, I'm not saying it's not. I was just saying for people who did not know what that was.
Right. Totally.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, I think that. So, do you have anything to add to that, Kate? From women's perspective.
From the women's perspective, I think ultimately, I love the characterizations of women and men in this show for the same reasons I love the female characters in Sailor Moon. Is you don't get one type of person. So there's, and I talked a little bit on our Sailor Moon episode where. It kind of, by having multiple female characters and by having them each have different positionalities, so positions in the world influenced by their experiences, they are able to exhibit different types of femininity and still be, you know, women and girls, you know, growing and learning. And that's one of the reasons why I really like Toph, because like, especially when I first started watching this show, like I love the color pink now. I hated it with a passion at a time in my life because I wanted to be sporty and I wanted to do, like, I didn't want to be weak. And to me, being feminine was being weak. And so, like, I've gone through my own transformation. And one thing that's helped me, like, really appreciate that is seeing shows like Avatar where multiple women that do different things are shown as being strong. Being pretty isn't being weak. And you see that with the Fire Sisters, like they are all different types of women, or, you know, women and girls who exhibit who they are differently and that they are still strong in doing that. And in the same way, like I think Sokka's journey is a really good point. And even Zuko's to understanding that like you can be emotional and still be a man. Obviously I'm not a dude, so this would be an area for like Adrian and stuff to talk, but just like, mostly for me, like it's showing that you can have emotions in different areas and still be strong as hell. And you can sit down, take a moment. And like one of my favorite scenes is actually, I don't remember what episode it's from, but Toph is airbending while she's crying, or not earthbending while she's crying. And like that hit me in my heart, like just square in my heart. Because that's something that like is specifically in a lot of animes is they do make women hyper feminine and girls hyper feminine, or like hyper cute is probably a better term for anime. And here it lets you see all of those things. Like, Toph is not the cute girl. Toph is not the pretty girl. But Toph also learns that you can be those things and still be strong. And she can let that part of herself, like, go. And so I think, like, as a show to show kids, like, this is a really good way to say, like, however you are and whatever you feel, live that and you can still be strong, because they have representation for all of those types of, like, personalities, because it is very much a personality thing.
100%. And I just want to add one more thing. I relate a lot to what's done so seamlessly about these characters is that, you know, whether you're male or female, you can relate to them very easily. My favorite character is Katara, for how she has to deal with, like, sort of being a person to take responsibility for her family, and who has to sometimes act as the emotional arbiter. I've had to deal with a lot of sort of family fights and stuff, and I can relate to Katara, like, so easily for what she has to do, and through finding, like, more confidence in herself and try to deal, like, with the pressures of the world around her. And again, it's just a testament to the amazing writing in this show that it really just breaks down those barriers. That's what it does so well. Yeah. Like, you don't just have to love a male character. You don't just have to love a female character. Just, like, just relate to who you want to relate to. And that's part of why this show is so popular and so important for kids.
Like, I think it's one of those cases, like, where it's done in a way that, like, it's the character's actions that you see first. And you don't, like, you see their actions and you see what they're going through before you see anything else, which is really good.
Yeah, and they all go through it in different ways, for sure. It's not, there's not, like, a standard that everyone's expected to kind of meet. And I think the best thing about it is that they all, like, let themselves go through these struggles. I think so often, what comes to mind is stuff like in the Marvel Netflix series, you know, when someone kills someone or someone does something bad, like, everyone's expected to, like, be something that they're not. And I know with, like, obviously completely different kinds of shows, but, like, you know, for example, like, when Katara is going through, like, wanting to do get revenge on the guy who killed her mom, Aang lets her go, and Zuko kind of, like, helps her go through that, and at the end, like, Zuko understands, like, why she does what she does and everything like that. That's some strong friendship bonds, and what I would hope would happen in real life. Like, it's real life. They portray it, like, if my friend was going through it, I'd be like, go through it. I'll be here through every step of the way. I'm not going to tell you how I want you to act. Kind of like how you said with Uncle Iroh. Like, Uncle Iroh probably knows the best way for Zuko to be, but he lets him get there on his own, which I think is super relatable. And everyone from kids to adults can kind of, like, take that in their own, like, life journeys. Do you want to... Do you want to talk about Korrasami?
Yeah, let's talk about Korrasami. Yeah, so I love Legend of Korra with all my heart. One thing that bothered me, like, during the first two seasons was the constant shipping back and forth. There were a couple of episodes in which they were pairing up characters or not pairing them up, and it was just really frustrating, and I don't know why they were doing that. The fandom as a whole, Legend of Korra fandom, like, really felt that as well. However, in season 3, we started noticing something. Korra and Asami started spending a lot of time together. Korra and Asami had dated a certain character, Mako. And basically, things didn't really end well with him. Mako's still a great character, great dude on his own. But basically, people start detecting some sort of chemistry between Korra and Asami. And we all know how Tumblr and online fandom can be, and, you know, especially in terms of shipping, but the shipping with this one was really, really strong. And people started wondering, are the creators actually setting up a romance between Korra and Asami, the first, like, American lesbian romance, like, you know, basically in history? And, like, at the final episode, Korra and Asami take a trip together at the end, and they hold hands, and they hold hands and look at each other in the eye. It's a very small thing, and obviously this was still on Nickelodeon, but after the show ended, the creators confirmed that, yes, Korra and Asami are now together. Korra Asami is canon. And the internet exploded. You had like articles written in Vanity Fair about this, maybe even in the New York Times. And it was just so groundbreaking for LGBTQ people to see themselves like, you know, even though it wasn't like we didn't get to see the relationship like unfurl fully on screen, we got to see like the beginning of it. We got to see like, I'm not LGBTQ, by the way, but I'm still someone who wants to see like that sort of representation in general. And, you know, as you guys know, with Star Wars, rep matters. And it was just so amazing that like this could actually be called canon. And now you're seeing their relationship and romance actually displayed in the Legend of Korra comic. I've read both issues so far, and it's done really, really fantastically. And actually in the Avatar world, it's a lot like our own world in that LGBTQ people aren't, you know, fully accepted. And basically, even though it ultimately seemed small, it was a moment and a phenomenon that just meant so, so much to people like in the real world, and in a way like helped to open doors later down the line. So, you know, Korra Asami matters so much, and, you know, is like referenced by, you know, people all the time. Like I have some lesbian and bi friends who, you know, a bi friend of mine like actually mentioned to me once like that her other bi friend, she's a woman on the internet. Even though she hasn't watched Legend of Korra, obviously she knows what Korra Asami is because it was that important. And I'm just like really grateful that the creators did this. And especially for Korra, my favorite character, to find someone that she could genuinely love and be herself, her true self to. And again, I love this series and how it ended.
That's why I let you talk about it, because I knew how passionate you were about it.
Thanks, man.
I don't know what the Korra Bolin thing would have been, but hey, my boy Bolin would have did it right.
But I love Bolin and Opal together. That's a great relationship.
Yeah, Bolin's great. He's one of my favorite characters in Legend of Korra.
You know what my favorite ship is?
What?
Sokka and the Moon.
Oh.
No, let Matt watch that. I want Matt to watch that and cry.
Oh, no. Kate, you're going to make me tear bend.
Why?
Because it wanted to rip your heart out and make you feel bad.
Is this like another falling kid out of the sky thing?
No. No. It definitely is not.
Avatar lore is not nearly as convoluted as Sailor Moon lore.
No, it's okay. Very straightforward. And they kind of get very digestible things. We're not like getting any moon babies.
Everybody knew it was going to happen. And
the funny thing about Sailor Moon is that they seem to just be making up the lore as they went along, right?
Yes. Yes. Babies falling from the sky. Time travel. Weird time travel. Reincarnation?
So what I do want to know about this, since you said there's a whole ritual and it was expected, so is it actually more of his own fault for actually portraying this to make it your heartbroken? Or was it just...
Well, he didn't know.
Yeah, he didn't know. So did she know? They're visiting another tribe, essentially.
Well, she didn't know until stuff happens. Like, she knows what she has to do, but she didn't think that thing was going to happen.
Yeah, it's kind of like a prophecy type thing.
It was more she thought that she was going to get shipped off to go marry some like arranged marriage kind of thing is what thought was going to happen. But some stuff happened and there was broken hearts and he's never going to love anyone like he loved her.
Yeah.
Even though Suki's really dope. Buddy.
Oh, come on. He loves Suki.
But he loves Suki for sure.
First girlfriend was the Moon.
Yeah. You can't really beat that. Yes, he has to see her every single day. He looks up. He's like, oh, there she is.
I love this show. I mean,
if him and Suki do it outside, does that mean that she's
walking? Oh, no.
Cut it out, but that's where my mind went.
This is a show for children.
Wait. Sorry. I just have to say, it was very heavily implied in season 3 that Sokka and Suki were having sex.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely was.
Sokka and Suki, and even Zuko and Mei too.
Yeah,
it seemed like we're pretty sure they were doing it. And they're like all like teenagers, which is great to think about.
Korra and Mako as well in Legend of Korra for sure.
Yeah. With that said, we'll get into some quick things that I think are just kind of like that I think are great about the show, but didn't really fit into any of like the major, but why those, and I didn't want to like take away from any of them. The action sequences are amazing. A lot of that has to do with the fight choreography being done by them consulting with like a real martial arts expert to do the fight choreography. So all of the, like Sora mentioned at the beginning of the episode with the different fighting styles, everything is distinct. Like the airbenders fight like airbenders, the waterbenders fight like waterbenders, and that leaves for really great action sequences and visuals throughout both of the shows. Lots of great lessons and quotes to live by. I put one up in my wall today to motivate my students who are getting rejection letters from colleges. And I would like to think that it's helping them through these very difficult times. The humor is great and works for all ages. Like we just said, like there's some implied sexual innuendos going on, but there's also like really great kind of just like slapstick humor jokes that work really well. And the music is great too. Specifically in Legend of Korra, I think the music in Legend of Korra is much better than Avatar: The Last Airbender.
So good.
Especially like the ending sequence of song is really, really good. And some quick fun facts. Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker.
My boy Mark, yeah.
He voices the main bad guy in Avatar: The Last Airbender, Fire Lord Ozai. And I don't know how this dude plays like the pinnacle of like virtue in Star Wars, but can also just play just an abusive father and like the best villain in DC Comics. Like, it's so crazy to me.
He's so good at being the villain. And Mark just has like a wonderful inner insanity about, a wonderful inner insanity about him that he gets out in his voice, and he is able to do the most awesome, crazy things with it. But, you know, with like Ozai, it's basically a version of his Joker voice, but so much more chilling and so much more like, you know, reined in, but still terrifying. And I love Mark Hamill so much.
Some other notable voices from famous people that you might recognize. Zelda Williams, Robin Williams' daughter, Henry Rollins, Audrey Plaza.
You mean Steven Aubrey Plaza?
Oh, okay. But Aubrey Plaza.
Don't worry. I was wondering who Rob Williams was.
I like
Robin
Williams. You know, he's my homie. Rob Williams, he's my homie. I like to think of him in a very positive light. Aubrey Plaza, Steven Yeun, Glenn from The Walking Dead, Jason Isaac, who basically his character is Commander Zhao, and his character was based off of his character from The Patriot. And
I love it so much because I hate that character so much. And that is like, The Patriot is a movie I will watch so many times, mostly, well, that like one scene, like when his kid first dies, but like mostly because Jason Isaacs is just so terrible.
Yeah, and Commander Zhao's a dick. So
he was also
he's also like
Malfoy.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Commander Zhao's also a guy who's like not very redeemable. That guy's just kind of a dick, like through and through, in the show. Other people, Greg Baldwin, who is Aku from Samurai Jack, and basically like, his voice doesn't change too much, and it's great. And I'm totally okay with, thinking Aku, but also thinking Uncle Iroh when I hear his voice.
Sorry, the initial voice actor for Iroh was Mako Iwamatsu, who unfortunately passed away like in season 2 of After the Last Airbender, so Greg Baldwin took over after him. It's really sad. And Mako in Legend of Korra was named after him.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, I think, is a great callback and good on the showrunners. And then you have Dante Bosco. Rufio is also credited as a voice actor. And that's kind of all the fun facts that I have.
Who is he? Does he do Zuko's voice?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, he's in so many freaking he does so much voiceover work. And that's obviously I know him because of Rufio, but I mostly know him because he's like in every animated series I watch.
Yeah, basically every voice that you can think of any for that like kind of type of character, it's basically him. I guess we can get into some fan but why those and then get out of here. So the first fan but why though, we got these from our Twitter. So thank you everyone for participating in that. And I'm going to butcher just all of these Twitter handles because I'm going to read them as something else. And it's going to pop into my head later that they're not that. At Mallory Conlin. Those themes, though, some of my faves. Aang staying true to himself and dealing with the problems his way. And Korra leaving her mark on the world despite it telling her to get lost.
By the way, I do love, before we read the next one, us reading these from Twitter, because you can tell that you have a very limited number of characters when it's so hard to try to read half of these.
Yes.
Yeah. At No Lit Class Pod.
Oh, no.
Gravity.
At what? Oh, no.
Oh, no. What did I say?
No.
Oh, no. At Oh, no. Lit Class Pod. Gravity Falls is probably my favorite cartoon of all time, but Avatar might be one of my favorite TV shows, full stop. It was ahead of its time in so many ways, and rewatching it as an adult is still a joy. I can completely agree with that. At David M. Gomez 91, Korosami, that is all. At Zero Spazinator, well, being that I graduated with an Asian studies major, Japanese minor, and study in 3 martial arts currently, I love how it tends to incorporate some of the Asian culture as well as the martial arts that demonstrate the bending techniques. We have one from Steven Suarez, co-host from Way Banthas.
My boy.
And his But Why Though was about Zuko's struggle with revenge and forgiveness, which I could totally agree with.
Which I do want to say, I remember jumping in on a thread that he had with Suara because he had borrowed the Last Airbender stuff. And it was so awesome to get updates in that thread because he was talking about watching it with his daughter. And it was just so amazing. And it warmed my cold, dead heart.
they both love Toph, by the way.
Yeah, Toph Beifong. She's the best.
She really is. I feel like she's like, okay, I love, we talked about Zuko a lot, but like, everyone just wants to be Toph. Let's be real.
I like Toph. And then our final But Why Though is from one of our Patreons, Nico.
And one of our writers at whythepodcast.com, because we have writers.
We do.
Go read the blogs.
Suara released one.
Yes, you did.
Suara is also a writer.
Yeah.
We got a community going, guys. Come join us.
And his Twitter handle is at Nicola, and we'll post all these on the thing because it's
at what? Huh? What the hell did you say?
Darth Nicol. You said Nicola.
Nicola.
You didn't that even looks like say Nicola. Darth.
It says Darth.
Say Darth.
I said Darth.
You didn't.
Yes, I did.
We have it on audio.
Suarez covered face because he knows.
I'm playing this shit back to you over and over again.
Oh my god, I love you guys.
And his one is a little lengthy, but you can really feel the love in this fan. But why though? He sent it to me in a picture of a Word document. So this is much longer than 280 characters as we go through this. But it's also written in correct grammar, so it should be easier to read. I absolutely love Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra. I'm 22, and I'm not afraid to admit that I watch these shows religiously at least once a year. I watched the first episode of Avatar when it came out on TV when I was a kid. I was hooked from the beginning. Now, as an adult, I still watch it, and it's still an amazing experience. The adventures and lessons I learned by watching Aang and his friends have been a huge part in developing my point of view and the way I go about life. I specifically chose to name my two dogs Appa and Momo. They were such great companions to Aang. Korra is amazing. Even though I was a bit skeptical, of the show at first, that easily turned around after the Pro Bending Championship match episode. The art style from the series was incredible. The fight choreographies were just jaw-dropping. I also like the steampunk / Bioshock style vibe that in that era gives off in the show. I definitely love the boundaries that the show crosses with the series finale. Made me care about the show a lot more. I absolutely recommend these shows for children, adults, and anyone in between. I'm sure you'll find something about it that you'll come back to time and time again, just like I did. I can only hope that many of you enjoy this show in all of its wonder and fantasy. in this one.
Thank you, Nico. He actually, if you're interested, he has a pro wrestling WWE blog up right now that he just put out, and it's on women's representation in wrestling.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Really cool.
Very cool.
Okay, shameless plugs are over. Well, plugs. Is it a shameless plug if it's our podcast? Like, can we just plug all we want? Is an hour of plug?
And I mean, it works.
It's your podcast. You should plug whatever you want.
Yeah. Our introduction to the top is basically like in a wrestling WWE style, like earthbending thing. So it all comes together.
It all works. We should put out Patreon content. We're just reading blogs.
Oh my God.
Chapter one. Okay.
But that's it. That's all I got. And the world is now balanced and we can move on with our lives.
Never. I'm going to watch this series like again and again until I die. I love it. I love it.
So much. Oh, same. Yeah. It's probably, it's definitely added to my yearly rewatch.
Yeah. Same.
I think it's like either yearly or like every 2 years or so for me. Yeah. It's just so good.
So, final thoughts?
I think this is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, television series of all time for all the various issues it tackles and for the way it definitely handles its characters in relation to those wider themes. And it's so, so beautiful in terms of how it's written, in terms of how it looks, in terms of these characters we have. And everyone should watch this show. This show should be put down in history as like one of the best ever made. And I will, you know, stay on that island for like the rest of my life. I love this series with all my heart.
I thought everybody goes to a hill, Sparrow goes to an island.
Well, that's what I meant. My hill, my island. You know what I mean?
Hey, it's fine. You can go wherever you want.
To his airbending temple. Or water tribe hut.
Exactly.
I just picture Sora saying, fuck this, I'm done, and like leaving the world and going to nothing but a box set of Avatar and Korra DVDs.
Exactly. Exactly what I would do.
I guess for me, kind of pretty much spilt my heart when it came to representation in the show. That's one of the reasons why I loved it, one of the reasons I'll still stick to it. Toph is amazing, and I mean, it's just, it's a powerful show. It's a powerful show, and when you watch it, and I'm really glad that Adrian went the non-spoiler route, because I spoil the crap out of everything, and this is definitely a show that if you're going to get into it, like, going into those moments fresh, you're going to feel it, so.
I learned a lot today.
You learned a lot about communism.
I know. The fact that this was one made on Nickelodeon blew my mind, and the fact that we literally related communism to a Nickelodeon show is still awesome.
Communism, colonialism, and cute animals.
The three C's. Yeah, and
global warming.
CCCG, yeah.
Be, technically, if you went to climate change, you'd
oh,
have,
yeah, the four
oh,
C's.
Oh, four C's. Colonialism. Thanks, man.
Oh, my God.
Communism, colonialism, C's. Cute animals, and climate change.
That's all that the show is about.
That's awesome. It is. There you go.
On a random side note, basically, we talked a lot about Tai Chi because of different things. And ever since basically Iron Fist, I can't take Tai Chi serious anymore.
Oh, no. No.
Because if you're going to be an action star, maybe make that not your only martial art that you learn.
Oh, my God.
For 15 minutes a day.
All right.
I didn't even watch Iron Fist. Ben and Jones. That's what he does. He uses Tai Chi. What?
Well, no, he doesn't use Tai Chi. Finn Jones only practiced Tai Chi to get ready for this role. A very physically intensive role.
Oh, he only did
Tai Chi.
Listen, if you can't bend water, Tai Chi is useless.
See, I knew bringing Marvel Netflix in, it wasn't too big of a stretch. It all comes around.
It's all connected.
But no, it was very informative, and obviously it also surprised me, like I said, because of how I said earlier, how there's only literally two shows with three seasons and four seasons and recently, but how much it apparently has affected a lot of people and how much is definitely loved.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of ran the episode, so like I think everything's kind of my final thought. I think Parting, I don't think it gets enough talk with people. I think more people need to go back and rewatch it. It definitely ages well. I think it'll always age well, unless like there's some super huge jump in animation style.
The funny thing is, you say age well, but the last one just ended in 2014.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know how time works, man. People think stuff is dated super quick. I think it's super well talks a lot about things that can be useful in your everyday life. You'll feel stuff, you'll laugh, you'll be amazed at the action sequences. Just don't watch the M. Night Shyamalan movie and you'll be fine.
Stay far and away from that.
Do you want to close us out or do I do?
You close us out.
What is this?
Okay. So, Swara, thank you so much for coming on to our show. You are a member of the But Why Though family. So tell everybody where and how they can find you.
So I am the co-host of Beltway Banthas, as well as being a very happy and like proud member of the But Why Though family. But Beltway Banthas is the Star Wars and Politics podcast in which me and my co-host Stephen Kent talk about all the intersections of politics and Star Wars in any way you can imagine it. And you can find us on Twitter at Beltway Banthas. You can find us on iTunes and find me on Twitter at Swara Saleh 1. That's SWARASALIH1. And you can find Stephen on Twitter at StephenKen_89. That's Stephen with a PH.
So what does a one in your name mean?
Oh my
God. Oh, that's just because like I had made one Twitter account with Swara Saleh and I had forgotten the password.
Yes, I knew it. Somebody already owned the one that was not already taken, so we had to put a one.
This is a reference to our 50th episode where we did questions and Matt just started talking about numbers and names.
Gotcha. You see, Matt would love Sokka. They both love numbers.
So as always, you can find the podcast at But Why Though PC on Twitter. It's our most active source of social media, but you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/ButWhyDoPC. We have shirts for sale on our Tee Public storefront. You can come join us on our Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you get access to all our research notes, episodes early, and for $3, you get special content, including all of the episodes we make handcrafted with love and movie watching for our $10 patrons. So check that out, patreon.com/ButWhyThoughPC, and make sure you stop by our website, butwhythoughpodcast.com, where we have an awesome team and family of writers that cover all the topics from tabletop reviews to representation to just pretty much everything you can think of in pop culture. And you can find me at Omar Mithrandir on Instagram and Twitter. Adrian?
You can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperReuiz93.
Matt?
And you can find me on the Twitter at DatM18, DATTM18.
Swara, how do you want to go out?
To the Avatar theme song, of course.
Okay.
Dun, 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 dun. Swara remix this Avatar. Yeah.
We're just going to loop that over and over again.
Yep. No.
I did it with the Game of Thrones one.
She did do it with the Game of Thrones one.
Man. Cool. No, but the actual theme song. Yeah.